I'm expecting you.
But you can say to yourself, in this moment, I choose not to engage. Dropping into the body, taking the breath. Moment, if there's just one thing, just deal with this moment right now. And whatever it is you choose to do, do something that's going to help you, because life is too damn short to feel less than, to not show up as the incredible, amazing, beautiful person that you are, and to not enjoy this magnificent planet on which we live. Life is too short. And so whatever it is you need, go out and get it and go within. In-source and access these incredible powers that you have, that we were born with, these innate powers. But do it. Turn to yourself and make the most of every moment that you have. And I really, really feel so passionately about that.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Reinvent Health podcast. Today, I have the wonderful Nikki Ciborini back on the show. This time, we dive deeper into what each and every one of us can do to manage stress, anxiety, and optimize our health for the better, all through the one modality we have available to us at any time, that being our breath. Nikki, welcome back.
Hello, Nick. It's wonderful, wonderful to be back. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. So we're back to talk about breath work, something you've been passionate about for a long time. And for those who are coming across this for the first time, what is breath work?
That's a wonderful opening, Nick, because a lot of people ask that question because they say, but hang on, I'm breathing. What do you mean using my breath to do whatever? But breath work is when we consciously use our breath to change the way we feel. And that's just basically what it is. If you change your breath, you can change the way you feel. So you can use your breath to help you sleep. You can use your breath to help you wake up. You can use your breath to help you focus, to release patterns of stress and trauma, to help you switch anxiety, to regulate your nervous system, to improve your cardiovascular health, immune system, and. There are so many positive results from consciously changing your breath. And the wonderful thing about breath work is they talk about it being a very powerful medicine, a missing pillar in our health. Because we have it, but we don't use it. We use it for life. I mean, we exchange oxygen, we turn it into breath, we feed ourselves, cells, we live, but we're not always breathing optimally, and we don't realize that if we shift our breath in a certain way, we can change so much in our inner sphere.
I suppose when you say this to people, they go, well, yeah, of course, you know, but we don't think about that because it's something we take for granted. And also because we live in a day and age where we think we have to spend a lot of money to be well. It's not all our control. And I think what's really magical about breath work, it gives you back some control over your health destiny, which is something we talk about a lot. So let's firstly set the stage. How did you become interested in breathing? I mean, As a career, as something you've been doing for years, you are taught how to breathe and how to modulate your voice and how important that is, just from how you come across to your guests and to your audience. But how did you come across breath work from a healing modality, and what triggered that for you?
Yeah, thanks, Nick. You know, as you say, I mean, I've been on radio for many years, and I'm actually a speech and drama teacher. And funny, when I used to go into companies and I used to teach soft skills training, a lot of emphasis was on correct breathing. All those years ago, just instinctively using the breath with my clients, you know, managing a breath hold, managing a slow exhale to get their mindset right, doing a box breathing. And that happened before. I mean, breathwork's been around and the use of breathwork for thousands of years, but I'm talking about the introduction and really using it. As you say, more and more people are using it now. And there was just this instinct to use it in that moment when you have to stand up and give a presentation. How do you harness this presentation, your performance? How do you start to harness the power of the breath? So the intrigue was there all those years ago. And then, of course, you know, COVID I think turned around so many things for so many people. For within my personal experience, I have shared it with you before. It was quite anxiety driven. It was for me. It wasn't so much that I couldn't breathe, but that I had this anxiety all the time, and that I felt that the only way I could manage my anxiety was when I extended my breath, when it was a slow exhale. So I was, once again, this was something that I really wanted to expand and explore. You know, I had done mindfulness meditation and using the breath to bring oneself back to the present moment, we do it. So it was after COVID, after developing the Halcyon so that people could also have the access to the slow exhale so that they could calm their nerves and calm the stress in the moment. And then I decided to study it further because this was something that had helped me. And if it had helped me, I wanted to know why and how could it help me more? And then how could I use it to help my clients?
Yeah, no, I love that. So how does mindful breathing really work on a like a parasympathetic nervous system activation? So when we're in fight flight and we're really stressed, there is a mind-body chemical signaling that goes in both directions that sends us into a state of feeling tense and anxious. So how does the stopping and the breathing change that?
Well, the breath is the thing that actually puts the brake on that, you know, the sympathetic nervous system, the fight flight. The breath is what puts the brake on. And why? Because when you slow your breath down, and we're talking about the exhale, when you extend and slow the exhale, and you start to really access that diaphragm, you stimulate the vagus nerve, and the vagus nerve calms the system. The vagus nerve is in charge of the sympathetic and parasympathetic nervous system. It's the vagus nerve that decides when it switches on and when it switches off. And so when you very consciously slow the exhale, extend that exhale, you are basically communicating with the vagus nerve, and the vagus nerve switches off that stress response and switches on that rest and digest response. And it's really as simple as that. Of course, a lot of people, we think that all the communication that takes place is between the brain, from the brain to the body. And we think that that's the only communication that happens. But more communication takes place from the body to the brain, and very specifically from the stomach area, and very specifically from the heart. And these messages are being sent to the brain all the time. So again, when you calm your body down, when you extend your exhale, when the nervous system starts to regulate, because the parasympathetic has been activated, and now you're regulating, then the messages to the brain are, everything's okay. Everything's fine. The heart rate has slowed down. The body's calming down. And then what does the brain do? The brain starts to secrete all the wonderful hormones that help you relax. Then the brain shifts, the prefrontal cortex switches on. And then, at last, you can start to regulate. You can start to think. You can be rational about it. And it all starts with the breath. So the breath begins this incredible, thing that's happening in the body and in the entire system. And all you did was consciously change your breath.
It is, but we're not taught to do that. We jump out into the world and we go for it. And no one ever said to us growing up, stop, take a deep breath, think, you know, slow everything down. It's almost the end. Maybe in Eastern cultures, it's different, where meditation and mindfulness and focusing on the breath is part of the daily practice for many, many cultures, but certainly not in the Western world. And I think that is very much part and parcel of why we see the disease states that we see and the levels of depression, anxiety, especially when we talk mental health. That's why we're seeing what we're seeing in the Western world, especially in the last, I'd say it's longer, but it's really come into focus since COVID. But it's been going on for years.
This idea that we need to be fixed, this idea that we go to the external world, and I'm not bashing medicine and doctors. I'm not bashing that at all, because when we need it, we need it. But what we relinquish, what we don't realize, is that we do have the ability to heal ourselves. And if we do have the ability to regulate, and we can do all of these things when we go in. I've said this to you so many times, it's the insourcing before we outsource. And the breath is just the most exquisite way, because we know how to breathe. We don't have to learn something new. We took our first breath when we entered this world. We know how to breathe. It's just shifting that breath. And you know, Nikki, something else that the breath does, besides we were talking about this regulating of the nervous system and changing that fight flight in the moment, it is an embodied experience. So again, in the West, we are so in our heads. We are so thinking, and it's all the thought and this constant story and intellectualizing and what, and we ignore the body. And the body, there's so much wisdom in our body. Our body is communicating with us all the time, as I explained to you, how much communication goes from body to brain. And so when we can comfortably sit in our body, when we can feel into our body, a tremendous amount of healing can take place as well. First of all, we notice when there's something wrong. We notice when there's something up. But very importantly, you mentioned mental health. You know, when you have an embodied experience and you're comfortable to be in your body and feel what it feels to be sad, to be angry, to be overwhelmed, to be frustrated, to really allow yourself to feel into it, incredible healing takes place. There's so much that goes into talk therapy. There's so much that goes into changing behavior. Those are all incredible. They're powerful. But we ignore all the messages, as I said, that have come from the body. So when we can use breathwork, there is such a transformative part of breathwork as well, when we can start to release layers of stress, layers of trauma. And once again, it's through the breath. We're not going outside, we're going inside. We're using the wisdom of the breath.
Yeah, and actually something that just came up for me as you were saying that is, we are taught, and you said all over social media, to trust your instinct. But your instinct is a conversation you're having, a rational conversation, very often in your head. And it's very often a confusing thing. And instinct is wrong 50% of the time. You know, intuition is goes through filters of experience and emotion and state and other people. So it isn't always your best sort of guide. But what we're not saying to people is, feel. What are you feeling? We're not taught to honor the feeling, whether it's an instinctual feeling, a body feeling, specifically a body feeling. We're taught to ignore body feelings. We're taught to medicate body feelings. We're taught to not talk about body feelings because we don't know how to put them into words. And I think this goes part and parcel with breathing, because when you stop and breathe, all you can do is feel. And I think for many people who've been traumatized or who don't know what to make of their feelings, this can be very, very difficult. So who comes to you as a client, as a breathwork client? What are they looking for?
So there's a range. So you can have someone who's coming along and they feel like they don't have a lot of energy, they're not sleeping very well, and they feel that something's up. So with someone like that, you're looking at their sleeping habits, you're looking at their breathing. Is it optimal breathing? Is it not? Why don't they have the energy? And of course, you're the nutritionist, and you know the importance of correct eating, you know the importance of correct sleeping. So I would come in from the point of view of using the breath to optimize the energy levels in the body. And we look at something as simple as, are you breathing from your diaphragm? How are you breathing? Is it too high up in your chest? Are you breathing from your nose, or are you breathing from your mouth? And at night, are you snoring? And do you suffer from sleep apnea? And so there's the physiological side. You can have people who come because they're in pain. You talk about not wanting to feel. I mean, one of the most excruciating parts of pain is trying to avoid the pain. It's what's happening in our mind around the pain. And so when we use breath work, it's the most gentle, soft pearl breath, and we can be with that pain, the pain starts to shift. And we start to change our relationship with pain. So then you can have someone who's coming with an issue where it's an emotional issue as well. And so then I would use a little bit of my self-inquiry, and then I use the conscious connected breathing, this transformative breathing that I spoke about. And this transformative breathing, conscious connected breathing, which once again has been used for thousands of years, and it then in the modern world it turned into holotropic breathing, and then there was rebirthing, and the conscious connected breathing is an offshoot of that. And you are allowing a person in a very safe space to breathe in a way that quietens the conscious mind, that allows the subconscious mind to come up. And in the space, layers of the stress, as I said, and trauma can come up. And it's not through conversation, and you don't even have to make sense of it. It's amazing what the breath can do and bring up. And so it's a range, as I said to you. It can be very physical, it can be physical and emotional. It's the breath moves through all of that.
So talk to me about breath work in children. This is something I'm very, very interested in. I see kids, well, we all do. We've all, you know, most of us have got kids. We see how they wind themselves up and they get themselves into a state. Kids who play a lot of sport. I mean, my daughter can do a whole show jumping around with one breath and then pretty much pass out at the end of it. And that, you know, what's really interesting is when she holds her breath, the horse says to her, "What's going on?" And their communication is completely doesn't work because she's holding her breath and the horse knows something's up. So the minute she starts breathing, you can see the animal relax. And it's so profound that just her consciously breathing relaxes her body and relaxes this animal. It's undeniable what breath does when you can see it, you know, played out like that. So how do you approach kids? You know, if someone came to you with kids, my child is suffering from anxiety, there's problems at school, they're not achieving because they're really wound up. How would you approach something like that, just purely from a breath management point of view?
I love the story about your daughter. So many of us hold our breaths, and the holding of the breath is not being in the body as well. So it's that normal, you know, it's that response. It's the fight flight response and the freeze. We hold our breath. So many people say to me, "Nikki, I'm just not breathing." So when it comes to kids, well, kids are amazing because they instinctively just know how to then breathe. When I work with adults, we're working with years and years and years of bad habits of breathing. So with kids, I always look at optimal breathing. I always look at how are you breathing? Many, many children, especially today, are breathing through their mouths, Nick. And mouth breathing, while it's important to breathe through the mouth, you know, we sigh and we can yawn, and there are times, yes, when we are performing or doing things we need to, and there's certain activating breaths when we want to energize, we breathe through the mouth. But the rest of the time, we should be breathing through our nose. And I find that a lot of children who come to me are breathing through their mouths. Now, when you breathe through your mouth, it has a lot of negative impact. It affects the way they sleep. It affects their teeth structure. It affects their concentration, affects their energy levels. It affects everything. So that's just the optimal breathing. Are they breathing high up in their chest? Are they breathing lower down from the belly? Because we say low, slow, and through the nose. That's what we want. Low from the belly, slow down the breathing, and through the nose. The nose is where we have to be breathing. Then it's teaching children to be in their bodies, to have this amazing embodied experience, to be comfortable, to feel all the parts of their body, to relax all the parts of their body. And then using beautiful breathwork techniques, just a slow inhale and exhale, a beautiful balanced breath, that they know that says something that they can use throughout the day. Now, when they're feeling that it's overwhelming or they're feeling stressed at school, a beautiful exercise would be to blow. And with the blowing is just an extended exhale, And so there are all these things that can really just put the brakes on the stress and the overwhelm in the moment. You know, I show them, because of this podcast, I can't really show it to your audience, Nick, but it's holding up the five fingers, right? And then they have an opportunity to trace with their fingers. So they start with the thumb and they inhale as they get to the, they trace to the top of the thumb, and then they exhale as they trace the bottom, all the way to the bottom. Then they inhale as they get to the top of the index finger and exhale. You get what I'm saying? So with children, we like to use very action orientated exercises where they use their entire body. So it's breath is breath. Breath is breath. The most important thing, getting them comfortable in their body, feeling. Allowed to feel.
And that's very clever because a lot of children, to get them to focus is, I mean, to get a lot of adults to focus is hard work. But if you're tracing something and it's using other modalities, it's much easier to create that point of focus. Just to go back to what you were saying about sleep, many people and many kids battle to fall asleep because we are so hyper activated too close to bedtime. And finding those kinds of techniques to calm the brain down, calm the body down is so useful. But again, what you said about not only mouth breathing, but earlier you mentioned sleep apnea. Now, many people understand the dangers of sleep apnea and how your risk for cardiovascular issues, heart attack, stroke, is so much more prevalent when a person suffers with sleep apnea. And what sleep apnea is they're holding their breath while they're sleeping for up to, I think it's anywhere up to 20, 30 seconds. It could be even longer. And this starves the brain of oxygen. Now, we understand the gravity of that situation, how dangerous it is. And I see in my practice, when people who do have sleep apnea do go to a doctor and get a CPAP machine, how much weight they lose just by getting their sleep optimized. Well, I mean, I've got a client who was battling, and within 6 weeks of using his CPAP, he lost 10 kilos of fat. It was, I mean, he had a lot more to go, but I mean, 10 kilos of fat just by getting his breath right. It completely changed the trajectory of his life. Now, you might not, or you may suffer from some kind of breathing disorder at night, whether it's just breathing through your mouth, which has many repercussions. I don't think people realize, you know, there's some significant studies on mouth breathing and brain development in children, how it really can impact IQ. So it's something that really should be addressed. And for parents, if you're concerned about this and you don't know if your kid mouth breathes or not, just walk into their bedroom at night and see, are they snoring? Snoring is a good sign that something's amiss, and it, you know, it might be a cold or a flu, but generally speaking, if your child's breathing through their mouth, this is something that really should be addressed. But what I'm trying to get to is that it points to the importance of breath and feeding your brain oxygen and how important that is for your health.
Yes. So a wonderful exercise to use before going to bed is the 4-7-8. And the 4-7-8 is something you can use with your kids as well, and it's certainly something you can use yourself. It's a slow inhale through your nose to the count of four. Then it's a gentle pause to the count of seven. And there's a big difference between holding and pausing. A holding is you're contracting, you're tensing. It becomes more uncomfortable to not breathe. A relaxing is just softening the muscles as you're pausing. And then a gentle exhale to the count of seven, and all through the nose. So it's an inhale, pause for seven, and then exhale to the count of eight. And remember that extended exhale, as I mentioned earlier, is going to stimulate the vagus nerve. It's going to calm the system down. Now, you do this regularly for a good 5 minutes before you go to bed. Within a few weeks, you will find it easier and easier to fall asleep. And a lovely thing, if your kids are finding it difficult, lie with them. Have fun. Again, draw. You can draw a triangle with it. You can discuss with them the shape of this triangle. You know, so it's a shorter inhale. Then you can draw, have fun, do it with them, and certainly do it with yourself. Something else that people do is they tape their mouths. Now, taping your mouth may sound, oh my gosh, that's, you know, it's scary and claustrophobic. And I used to be, before the breath work, quite claustrophobic. I'm very happy to tape my mouth. It's a microspore. It's not thick. It's easy. You tape it. I don't tape it from one corner of the mouth to the other. I just tape it from the top of my lip to the bottom of my lip. It's a tiny little tape, and it stops me from breathing through my mouth. So that's going to go a long way in promoting nasal breathing as opposed to mouth breathing. So I just want to put that forward to any of your listeners who really are concerned about their sleeping and mouth breathing during the night. And it's painless and it's easy and it makes a huge difference to your sleep and eventually practicing and using that mouth breathing. When it comes to intrapersonal, so you were saying, Nikki, when you are in a situation when you're confronted or it's in a relationship and someone says something and you want to use your breath. And I think that this is something that we can teach our children as well. And this is something that's really important. And I love to use a check-in before you check out.
Yeah.
And the check-in yeah. is very much, how am I feeling? What is happening in my body? You know, where am I? Am I overreacting? Am I underreacting? Or am I in the comfortable space? Can I respond in the situation? Can I not respond in the situation? And using breath in such a beautiful way, it can be such an incredible sigh in a moment of a, without them even seeing that you're sighing. And it's a pause. And it's an extended exhale. And when you do that, once again, just understand that as soon as you stimulate your vagus nerve, and as soon as it switches off the sympathetic nervous system, which is going to be activated when you feel like someone is attacking you, when you feel like someone is complaining or doing whatever, and the sympathetic is stimulated, it's that extended exhale, the parasympathetic switches on. And I'm going to repeat it, what I said earlier, as soon as the parasympathetic nervous system is activated, all of a sudden you can think clearly, your prefrontal cortex comes back online, and you can be more rational. Mm-hmm. So you don't have to act and react immediately. Use that breath. Inhale through the nose, extend right. your exhale. Another wonderful thing to do, if you're talking about interpersonal relationships and you can be in a meeting and you can feel that maybe you're about to present something, or you know that someone's going to ask you a question yes. and you're feeling a little bit nervous and you feel like you need to be focused, is to use a lovely square breath. And a square breath, no one can see that you're doing it, Nick. You can be sitting there and you're just inhaling in the square breath. You're basically drawing a square with your breath. So you're inhaling, and again, through your nose, to the count of seven, you're pausing to the count of seven, exhale to the count of seven, pause to the count of seven. Now, the Navy SEALs use this because they have to be so relaxed and incredibly focused at the same time. So if you're in a meeting, if you're out with friends, if you're at a function and you're feeling like you're not coping very well, use the square breath. No one can see it. No one's going to see it. It'll calm you. You'll be focused. You'll be present. And there's so many other exercises. That's what you're doing. Change yeah. your breath to change yeah. how you feel.
Yeah. It sounds like when you're focusing on your breathing, you're buying yourself time. You're giving yourself space between situation and reaction. Absolutely. You don't just fall into reactivity. You're giving yourself the pause.
100%. It's that gap starts to widen because you're using your breath and you don't feel like you need to react so quickly. It's a magical, wonderful tool.
It's just profoundly simple. And that just keeps coming up, how simple this is, but we don't think about it until someone brings it into our conscious awareness. But that's what you're here for.
And the more you do, the more you see the results. And also, when you become aware of your breath, you're present, you're in the moment. It just brings you back to the here. Everyone's talking about the present moment. Well, how do you get to this present moment? Just watch your breath. Yeah. You know, just follow your breath, breathe consciously, and then you are here. You're in this.
So let's talk about self-inquiry then, because yes, the breath complements this, because anyone listening to this going, wow, I need to do this breath work, probably needs both. And what do you offer? What can a person expect when they come to you? Because life is just, you know, not working out as it should be.
So self-inquiry, once again, and it is so similar to breath work, is that in that you are going within and you're listening. You're listening very, very carefully to the truth of what is unfolding. And that sounds so woo-hoo, what I've just said. Mm. But when we are stuck in beliefs, when we are stuck in thoughts and stories about things, it becomes our experience. And so very often, it's not what is happening that is causing our suffering. It's our resistance to what is happening that causes our suffering. Uh-huh. So often, it's not what someone has said to us, but it's what we are interpreting and what it's bringing up inside of us. You know, uh-huh. when a situation doesn't go our way and we are devastated because of and we've put everything into it and it's not happening. It's not that the situation's not going our way. It's what we, the meaning we give it, what we think about it. So it's our thinking that creates, unfortunately, the suffering, because ultimately life is life. It's unfolding. And when we get with that, things happen in their time and things unfold. We didn't create this life. We are recipients. We're here for a short period and life is unfolding. And so when we start to work with what is the thought that, where is this resistance? What am I resisting? So when we can isolate the thought or the belief that is creating the suffering, she's not respecting me. My partner doesn't respect me. That, you know, and every time you have this interaction with your partner, she is not respecting you and she says something and it causes suffering and it causes pain and it causes frustration. And when you identify, for example, she does not respect me, you inquire. You go within, the self-inquiry is going within and questioning it. Because when you question it, it starts to change. And when you can change the thought, the experience changes. And it's really just four questions and a turnaround. And you ask the question, is it true? Can I really know it's true? What happens to me when I believe that thought? Oh. And who would I be without the thought? And then you take the original thought and turn it around. And it is, as I said, it's almost this meditative process, and the breath helps beautifully, because when you sit with the third question, what happens to me when I believe she doesn't respect me? And that is the part of dropping into your body. When I talk about breath being this embodied experience that you can safely drop in and go, oh, I can feel my stomach tightening. I can feel anger rising from my stomach all the way into my chest. I feel a tightening in my jaw. I'm angry. I lash back at her, or I become withdrawn. I become quiet. I'm so hurt that she doesn't. And you really go into what happens to you. How do you behave? How do you show up? How do you treat her? How do you treat yourself? And that's where this breath work comes in. And then you get to the fourth question. And this almost takes the leap of faith, because you've been holding on to this belief that she doesn't respect me for so long. And then remember, this is self-inquiry. It's not right or wrong. There's no right or wrong way. You are very honestly going within and questioning, who would I be if I didn't believe she doesn't respect me? So how would I show up with this person? How would I feel in my body? What kind of thoughts would I have? What kind of actions would I take with her if I didn't believe that she didn't respect me? And when you allow yourself to feel, and again, you use your breath to drop in. And for some people, Nick, it takes a long time, because that belief she doesn't respect me, this is everything, right? But if I can just for a moment drop it, and then you get to experience the freedom of who you are without that thought, then the brain starts to rewire, because the brain has experienced something else. It's so incredibly powerful. And then just to make sure that you've had that experience, you're now really going into the rewiring. You take that original thought and you just find the opposite. So she doesn't respect me. What's the opposite if she doesn't respect me? She does respect me. And you sit with that. Are there moments when I'm with her that she does respect me? And I could probably find 3-4 examples when she does respect me. Oh, okay. So I explore that. Then what is the other turnaround? She doesn't respect me. And then the turnaround is from me to her. I don't respect her. And then you sit with that for a bit. Are there times when I don't respect her? Well, just the fact that I think that she doesn't respect me is a certain amount of disrespect. respect towards her, and I sit with that. Can I find examples when I haven't respected her? And it can be a bit ouch, Nick. You can be like, ooh, you know. And then the final turnaround is to yourself. I don't respect myself. Could that be true? Could that be even more true that she doesn't respect me? And as I said, this is a self-inquiry. This is a dropping into yourself, quiet moments, breathing, feeling, questioning. So it's going from mind to body, mind to body. And once you've questioned it, you can't possibly ever feel that she doesn't respect you because you've shifted it and you've changed it. You know, Nikki, everyone wants to feel peace. Everyone wants to be happy. It's not just some people. That's what we crave. We all crave it. We're all on different journeys. And it's just one step at a time and being so kind and gentle to ourselves and exploring the best that we can.
Yeah, it is so profound. But, you know, in NLP, what you've just described is what we call, it's not a pattern interrupt, but it scrambles and remaps neuroplasticity. So when you ask those questions, those pathways that have been so ingrained over so many years that we've, the stories that we've told ourselves, how stuck we are in those pathways, get rerouted. And once they're rerouted, the chemical expression from the brain to the body changes. And there's no pill you can take to do that. There's no medication you can take to change that feeling in your body. The only way you can do it is by changing your story. And the only way you can change your story is by asking questions, because it is so powerful, because it changes everything. It changes how you talk to yourself, how you feel about yourself, how you relate to the world, and how the world relates back to you. And if that doesn't change people's lives, I don't know what does. It's probably the most powerful form of therapy. You know, there's talk therapy, which has its place and is incredibly powerful and useful for so many people and so many applications. But I really believe if people want to change their lives for the better and are stuck and not getting anywhere, this is the route to go.
Yeah, it is. It is. Yeah. And as you said, you're doing it, Nick. You know, the self-inquiry, I mean, in the beginning, it's great to have a facilitator to help you. But ultimately, down the road, when you're conscious with your breathing, so you're more present, you get to identify, oh, I'm feeling so defensive in this situation. I'm feeling incredibly defensive. And so your breath will take you there. You feel it into your body. You identify very quickly, well, what am I thinking right now? Like, what's come up? And usually it happens afterwards, actually. But what came up for me? And then that's the question. So we're doing it. We're helping ourselves. And ultimately, that's the road to freedom, when we can do it, when we can take ourselves there.
Yeah. And this is, I think, what they call, they when they say becoming the observer of your thoughts, not in your body, but the observer of your own thoughts.
That's it.
And I think it's Joe Dispenza who talks about this quite a lot from his point of view from healing, is when we can observe our thoughts and invite them to be different, it's amazing what changes in your life.
It's that metacognition. You know, that's what we are as human beings. The Homo sapiens, we think and we know we think. And that's what's extraordinary about it. So it's so positive, because we can use that so powerfully in that we observe, oh, this is what I'm thinking. I can shift and I can shift myself. But to the same extent, it can be hugely detrimental, because we get sucked in and we become those thoughts, and we think that we are our thoughts. And once again, and we think that we think our thoughts, and most of our thoughts we aren't thinking. I mean, you and I are having a conversation and we're engaging, and of course we're thinking, we're communicating, we're accessing different parts of our brain to interact. But the rest of the time, when we're not focused, our default mode network lights up and thoughts are just being generated. Our mind is secreting thoughts. So we're not even thinking those thoughts that are coming from the subconscious. And so many of those thoughts are negative. And then we think we are those thoughts. It's an awful, awful place to be when you don't realize, oh, I'm just thinking my thoughts. There's me noticing I'm thinking. And as soon as you pull yourself out and you're the observer, a lot of the stress and the pain starts to dissipate.
Yeah. Why do you think we have a negativity bias?
Yeah, you know, I've spent so much time thinking about that on top of the science behind it and just, you know, the evolution and how we're wired in our brain. And you can't ever underestimate the fact that we are, you know, we're human beings and we are wired for survival. Hence, we have this sympathetic and parasympathetic nervous system. We've got parts of our brain that are ancient. This was the initial beginning, the start of our brain. And that was very much, so we talk about the reptilian brain, and that is definitely, you know, we're just surviving. And so in order to survive, we want to belong. And in order to survive, we've got to make sure that we're safe. And in order to survive, we've got to know that we have a roof over our heads, that we are part of this community, and.
Yeah.
And that when we don't have that, it's a real issue. So we are continually projecting into this very fearful future based on certain things that could have happened in the past. And that's what we are using to drive us into this future so that we can be safe. And it's all based on all the bad things that have happened to us, because right. we don't want them to happen again. And so we have this negativity bias. We're looking at all the awful things so that they don't repeat. And actually they are repeating, because we're taking those things that have hurt us in the past, the things that have disappointed us, the things that have been very scary, and we're using them in this moment to create a future. And that's where this negativity bias, and you've got to short circuit it. You've got to wake up. This is how I'm wired, but I'm actually also wired to feel gratitude. I'm actually also wired to connect with human beings. We've got these mirror neurons. I can feel you. You can feel me. We can be connected. When I help you, then other amazing things happen in my body and I feel good. Yeah, the default is to be negative, because it's the negativity, it's the bad things that are going to avoid a very scary future.
Yeah, I think it's also exposure.
And of course. Oh my goodness, of course.
You know, we are inundated with the most ridiculous worst case scenario every time you turn on a TV or listen to the news or listen to some kind of political debate. It's enough to make anyone dive. You know, live in a permanent state of negativity bias. So I think, you know, curating what you're exposed to, and especially what your kids are exposed to, is critically important for a happy life. It's not to say you must be, you know, head in the sand. We've got to choose what we expose ourselves to, because too much is it just doesn't bode well for anyone's state of health or state of mind.
Yeah. And we have to also realize that we become addicted to that negative news. We become addicted to that drama in our life. We may not like it, but we become addicted to it. We become addicted to the adrenaline in our body, and we want more of it. And so we are drawn to these terrible things. You know, sometimes it's, oh no, I don't want to watch it. But how many people are drawn to these hideous videos, terrible videos? And once again, why is the news always negative? Because that's what people pick up on, because we're always trying to avoid a scary future because it's part of our survival. Yeah. So you're right, Nikki. It's such a consciousness. It's when people talk about waking up, it's not a woo woo thing. It's wake up, know what you're thinking. That's it. Make the decision. Curate, as you say, what am I reading? What am I ingesting? What am I watching? And the breath, and I'll have to go back to the breath. As soon as you're feeling that overwhelm, as soon as you realize you're holding your breath, I mean, the most beautiful thing is a delicious sigh, an inhale. And there are times when I make the most of my sigh. It's a, you know, you can do whatever you want, but as soon as you engage with that beautiful conscious sigh, you shift everything. You're shifting your mind, you're shifting your body. We've spoken about the chemistry, we've spoken about the wiring, but you get to do it. You get to notice when you're holding your breath. You get to notice when it's shallow. You get to notice. And then in the moment, you change it. You change it. You don't have to grab anything. You don't have to quickly, you get to do it. And that's what's so special and amazing and very powerful.
It is so powerful. And it's just such a beautiful conversation. So I'm hoping anyone who listens to this can take ownership of their lives and they don't have to be a victim to their thoughts and their state. And that would solve so many problems for so many people and really make the world a better place when we realize we can make a decision in the moment to be different.
Exactly.
So exactly. I think what you're doing is absolutely wonderful. Whatever drove you to go down this path, the light and the energy that you bring to it, I just hope it comes back to you 100-fold. When you put this love out into the world, you just get it all back in abundance, because that's what it is. Helping people is the single best gift we all have. And we've all got a way to help people and help people live better lives. So how can somebody listening to this get hold of you? Where can we find you if someone's listening and is driven to want to know more, who's interested in self-inquiry, is wanting to get involved with breathwork? Where can we find you?
Thank you. Thank you, Nikki. Thank you. Well, just go to my website, nikkiseberini.com. Everything is there, contactable. You can also follow me on Instagram, Nikki_Seberini, or Nikki Seberini on Facebook. But the website, everything is there. Everything is there. And I just want to say, Nikki, that, you know, we look at the external. It's part of that negativity bias you spoke about, that we're exposed to so much, but we're also exposed to a lot of stuff that is simply untrue. And we see the perfect environment that other people are living in, and we want that, and we think that we have less or there's something wrong with us, and it's that. And what I'm trying to say here is many of us just below the layers are having a really hard time. There are a lot of people who are really, really suffering out there. And just based on our conversation and what you've said, it's the realization that in this moment now, you can choose. Just take the breath. How do I choose to use this thought? Do I choose to engage with this thought? No, it's there. It's there. I know it's there. And all the supporting thoughts are there. But you can say to yourself, in this moment, I choose not to engage. Dropping into the body, taking the breath. Moment, if there's just one thing, just deal with this moment right now. And whatever it is you choose to do, do something that's going to help you, because life is too damn short to feel less than, to not show up as the incredible, amazing, beautiful person that you are, and to not enjoy this magnificent planet on which we live. Life is too short. And so whatever it is you need, go out and get it, and go within, in-source and access these incredible powers that you have, that we were built, born with these innate powers. But do it. Do it. As I said, we think everyone's perfect. We think everything out there. Nonsense. It's nonsense. It's absolute nonsense. Stop worrying about them. Turn to yourself and make the most of every moment that you have. And I really, really feel so passionately about that.
Completely agree. And you draw the right people to you when you start thinking like that. The right people gravitate to you.
For sure. For sure. It's a beautiful, beautiful journey. Can be painful, but it's a beautiful journey.
It's worth it. Completely worth it. Nick, thank you so much. What a lovely conversation to end the week on. I'm so grateful that we could have some time to chat. And yes, may it all come back to you 100-fold, all the good you put out in the world. I think it's just so beautiful.
Thanks, Nikki. And thank you for having me on your podcast once again.